This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday. It is the 3rd of the 4th of 19. Does that make any sense? The Americans always swap the month and the date, and then it confuses a lot of people. They're not sure what that means.
Americans do all kinds of shit arse about face.
American.
Imperial system. What is that shit?
The only people in the world, if you look at a map and we color in all the countries that have the imperial system as opposed to the metric system, there's one.
Is there not like one other backward-ass place?
Like somewhere like Bhutan.
Yeah.
Everyone else has accepted the metric. Everyone. But it's, we criticize. Like in European countries, they hold these ridiculous traditions that mean absolutely nothing and are completely anachronistic and stupid.
But you don't have to use them every day for applying your regular life.
But like royal families. I mean, you have to call someone your royal highness because they were born to certain parents. And in America, we're like, oh, you stupid idiots with your imperial system. They're like, it's our tradition.
But you don't have to do it every day. You don't have to, like, manage your life according to it. You don't have to be like, well, how far is it to the nearest chop? Well, you have to take a duke for 4.7 duchesses and then an earl of...
But it's like,
it doesn't have a practical...
Some of us do.
They know that. And you know what? You tell someone how tall you are. I go 187 centimeters, and some people look at you like you're insane. And I then have to go about 6'3", and then they go, that's here.
But it's like to say that the imperial system makes sense because there's other shit in the world that also doesn't make sense. How you get to like a yard is this many feet, and then there's many pipes. That's crazy.
Look, it is. It's annoying. So how are you, Gord?
Yeah. I love the imperial system. That's how I am.
Myanmar and Liberia are also keen on the imperial system.
Well, again, two really forward-thinking places.
Yeah, I knew there'd be some like weird place like that.
Well done, Ben.
Didn't Michael Jackson once have a girl from Liberia?
That was
Liberian
a song.
Liberian girl. You know, not change my world.
That's the most random thing to sing about. Like, unless it's a song about a real girl who happened to be from Liberia, if you sit down, you're like, I'm going to write about a tragic love story. The girl in the love story will be from Liberia.
The love song will be with... Who else has the imperial system? Liberia,
I couldn't date a metric girl.
I haven't thought of that song in a while.
Guys, there's so much to get to this morning. I'm going to try and keep us on track. We've got a clairvoyant who's going to join us on the show later on. I know Gord loves clairvoyants. They're his favorite.
I had this feeling like there'd be a clairvoyant.
She's a Persian clairvoyant, Aida. And she's going to tell us who to vote for. She's going to give us a reading on Cyril, Julius, Musi, Donald Trump, and Theresa May. Isn't that interesting?
So we're going to Brexit today.
We're going to Trump. We're going to Brexit. We're going to EFF. We're going to DA, and we're going to ANC. Pretty much all the most horrible things you can imagine between 7:30 and 8.
We've already done the bloody imperial system. We're getting things off the list at a rate of knots over here.
By the end of this...
Of course, one knot is 3 clervets, and a clervet is 18.6 mkums. So that's how you measure a knot.
18.6 mkums. All right. Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
I've made note of that. Thank you, Gord.
All right, let's get into this. So first things first, I thought this might be interesting to Gord, who is always saying how terrifically handsome everyone else is, but actually, Gord, we all know it's you. So listen to this
projecting.
Quickly. Apparently, being too handsome can actually harm your career.
What, your career in construction?
Yeah.
So according to a men's health magazine in the UK this time, they say, listen to this, the research that they've just done, and it's not they just did it, there's research done by a number of London academics from the London Business School and the University of Maryland, which is in the US. They comprised 4 office experiments. Participants were presented with scenarios in which they had to choose from from a couple of candidates, right, to fill a specific vacancy. Each of the candidates had identical qualifications and skill sets on their CV. The only real distinction was the photograph that accompanied it. All right.
Okay.
Now, when men hire other men, their decision is negatively influenced by the attractiveness of the candidate for the type of job.
You don't want a hottie working for you. You want to be the office hottie.
Well, yeah, I think men, we remove a threat, right? Yeah. We get rid of a guy who could be a potential alpha male suitor for the women.
This is why I've been secretly Lannistering behind the scenes to help Ben usurp you on the show. But we're getting there.
So apparently, men are likely to be rejected for roles requiring individual talent, such as sales and investment banking, and instead gravitate towards less important positions. Office heartthrobs are more likely to work in roles where team performance is rewarded, enabling the boss to further their own career. Okay, so the lead researcher here suggests outsourcing the hiring process to a recruitment company is probably the solution, because then it doesn't really depend on whether the boss likes the look of your face or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the results are when women are in charge, but I would imagine it would be the opposite.
The boss is still always going to have a say on who the outsourced HR people select. I mean, you're not just going to be like, here's your new person, have a job.
Yeah, look, Gareth, I don't believe a whole bunch of that. I think a lot of these tests are kind of retrofitted from a headline. So they go, okay, what's a great study with a great headline? Oh, okay. I know, sexy people don't get jobs. Okay, well, how are we going to make this work? Okay, let's now work back and put some science into it.
I think
it.
You're right. And I also think there's a problem with this, because we're always trying to find a way to pull the better people down so the rest of us feel better.
Yeah,
right?
And I'm
like, it's if a someone's, great if headline someone's, for
yeah, if someone is,
media.
If someone is just the most incredible shape, and let's say someone is extremely rich and they're successful and they're clever, yeah, part of us really doesn't like that, and we're deeply jealous. So if we can find a story that maybe reinforces, no, you're also okay, they've actually got problems too, it makes us feel better. Maybe exactly. You've got a point.
On that note, screw you, Gareth. But
what have I done to you?
You've just been successful and kind of good looking. But I agree with Ben, because I've worked in like situations where total cretin guys that like present themselves well just seem to come off professionally.
Like they've got a slickness.
Yeah, there's a certain groomedness and outfit scent, like awareness that takes away from the fact that once you've worked, you assume the person's got their shit together until you've worked with them long enough to know, like, you're a polished cretin.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, but like, whereas if a raw, uncut cretin comes up, you're pretty quick to say, like, you look like a cretin and you are one. But I also, like, there's a lot to be said for a dark horse person that doesn't put too much thought into their appearance, and you kind of don't take much note of them. And then after working for them for a while, you kind of end up in close quarters with them work-wise, and suddenly you're like, oh, wait, you're a complete genius. And then you almost appreciate more that they're not, like, peacocking around.
Yeah, yeah. I think also, like, a lot of this stuff has happened in the workplace recently, because we don't have dress codes anymore to the degree that we used to, right?
Yeah.
Everybody used to wear suits. Everybody had to be super well-groomed, and you had to have shiny shoes, and you had to wear a jacket. And these days, the norm outside of financial services institutions and maybe law firms, the norm is to not dress like that.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think it's probably a little more egalitarian. People actually do appraise you based on your appearance. I mean, on your the content of your work rather than your appearance. And I think that's probably a good thing. Having said that, though, there does seem to be a lot of power in appearance.
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of And this goes not just for the way you dress, but how good looking you are. Like, it's been proven time and time again that good looking women do get ahead a lot faster.
But I was going to bring that up, because I've like there is opportunity for better looking women, and there's also a negative. There's kind of a downside. Like, I've seen both ends of that. I've seen like the Joshua Dore sort of white suit wearing males in the room kind of not pay attention to the eye candy.
Did you just call them Joshua Dores?
Yeah, I always think whenever I think of like the board of directors somewhere that's like supremely white.
Oh, they've got like that hair.
They all just remind me of Joshua Dores.
That is so apt.
Yeah, they kind of like don't take the lady person seriously because they're eye candy, but at the same time, they're never short of a raise or like a secure position as a PA. It's definitely a double-edged sword.
But which do you think there's more of? Do you think there's more detriment, or do you think there's more benefit?
Oh, come on.
Because I would say benefit.
I'd say
door opening, benefit. Staircase climbing, detriment.
Yeah, that's probably a reasonable assessment, although I'm with Sia. I mean, like, given the choice, if you were given, if you were there when God hands out all the stuff, all the goodies, and he says, right, we're going to make Gord Laws, are we going to make Sia, are we going to make anybody? Let's say this is you. Picture yourself there, and there are all these cookie jars that God takes a handful of this. And
thanks for the obesity, God. I'll have two more, please.
So he asks you, you're not going to go, yeah, give me a little more ugly because then people will take me seriously.
Promotion. Speak for yourself. That's exactly what I was like. Yeah.
No, I mean, would you ask for more ugly? Clearly fucking not. No. Right? That's ridiculous.
But also, that's also subjective because some people's idea of ugly and other people's idea of attractive is different.
No,
but
folks,
there are,
no, let's call
there
it
are
what
universal
it
good-lookingnesses. Like, it would be very hard to play a hate on Chris Hemsworth. Like, he handsome. The only question is, do you think he's very handsome or very fucking handsome?
What is the operative term there? He's handsome regardless.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a person who legitimately believes they think he's unattractive and would rather not be looking at him than looking at some, like looking at like a dog turd, then that person has got, like, they've adapted poorly to the world.
Oh, just his ex, basically.
Probably still likes the look of him, but just but like, hates very, the fact that she no longer gets the Hemsworth.
All right. Let's
Sir Hemsworth.
let's agree then that there
was not Hemsworthy.
Okay.
Hemsworthy sounds like something that should happen in a haberdashery.
Your Hemsworth. He's got Australian accent. Yeah. Anyway, you're Hemsworthy. I don't know.
You're Hemsworthy.
Well done, Sheila. Yeah, like you're Sheila, Hemsworthy.
Really got him on the right side there.
You know, good luck. Good on you.
Okay. So tell me whether you think Julius understands xenophobia and racism or whether he's completely confused. I'll play you a clip from a rally where he was addressing xenophobia, something I think we can all agree is shit.
Can we bet on this before you play the clip?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm putting money on Julius Malema having a total, clear, and unbiased, very reasonable assessment of xenophobia.
Wow. All right.
And not mixing it up, not being
hundred-ront.
Not full of hypocrisy at all. Anyone else want to place a pre-bet?
Yeah, I'm going with the fact that he's just a jackass. He's going to mince his words. And
100 rand, you're on, Kapinski.
Yeah, no, just to make things
easiest money I ever made.
No, but you two... Oh, so you're not being sarcastic.
I'm
so
completely sarcastic, but I'm willing to spend 100 rand on it.
You two are always so competitive. Okay, they're actually whipping out cash right now.
Let's make it 50. I haven't heard the clip. I'm just going on the fact that he's going
to... So this is Julius. Thank you to ENCA for the clip here. Take a listen. This is Julius, right?
EFF leader Julius Malema has called for unity. He was speaking at his party's Western Cape Manifesto launch in Cape Town yesterday.
Stop your self-hatred. Stop attacking our brothers from Africa, our sisters from Africa. We are one thing. You say batata umsebenzi. Even if we expel them tomorrow, you will still not get a job. There are no jobs in South Africa.
So far...
So far, my money's creeping towards me. Yeah.
Right. So far, he sounds very sensible. Like, he's right. The reason that there's xenophobia is because people have self-hatred. They loathe themselves. They have huge insecurities. Mm. They take it out on a foreigner who has the balls, the gumption, the courage, the propensity for risk, and an economic understanding that forces them to... And in some ways, I suppose you can't say forces, but that motivates them to open up very difficult businesses in very difficult places.
Yeah.
And really, like, they work a very long day, they work very hard, they have very small margins, and they're constantly faced with this threat of violence.
That
to
person with way more obstacles than me that's come in with like a language deficit and no infrastructure has created a job for themselves that's better than the job I don't have. They've stolen my job that they created out of nothing.
Right. It's complete nonsense. That is the sort of xenophobia that people who are pro-immigration often will cite as a perfectly good example of why we should be in favor of skills coming into the country, of hardworking people coming in, and I agree. I don't think anyone will disagree. As long as it's legal, we have no problem, right?
Sure.
So, Julius makes sense up to 33 seconds into this clip.
Uh-oh.
But wait.
There's more.
Well, he doesn't see any irony at all in what is about to be a very clear contrast, because in his mind, racism trumps xenophobia. So watch. Watch how he twists this and turns it into something about his enemies, right?
Because whites are refusing to invest money in South Africa, they've got too many savings in the bank.
Now, let's just stop right there. I don't know for a fact, but I think it's true that not a single white South African attacked anyone from Malawi or Zimbabwe. So he's drawing the whites into this, where this is not the whites' fight, with all the love in the world. And I hate the way he racializes everything, but I don't believe that any white person is responsible for xenophobia.
Let's say a negligible amount, because there might have been like two that were
bored
that day.
Maybe there were two very strange also, white people lurking around, and they got caught up in this.
But it's a negligible percentage.
And it goes against his argument that he's just made.
Also, if you have too much money in the bank, it's fair to assume, in most cases, that's a South African bank, because it's very difficult, especially if you don't have alternative citizenship. If you don't have dual citizenship of some kind, it's very hard to put money in a non-South African bank. So let's say that money that they have too much money in the bank and they're not investing in South Africa is like saying they've got too many pies in the fridge and these people are not eating.
But he's teeing it up so that he can make, don't be xenophobic, but you can hate the whites.
Hate whites.
All right, so here we go, watch.
They've got trillions in the bank. They are refusing to take it out and build industries. There is no Nigerian who stole an industry and hired Nigerians only. There is no Zimbabwean who's got a farm in Knysna or Stellenbosch who hired Zimbabweans. It is your white people who hire Zimbabweans, pay them low, so that you can fight amongst yourself as Africans.
So people, of course, are forced into indentured labor, according to Julius. These are not people who voluntarily go and work for someone on an agreed wage where both parties are consenting. No one is. I've never seen anyone say to a Zimbabwean or Malawian at gunpoint, you will work for this money or I will kill you. They say, here's what I can offer. Would you like the job? Right? So that's the first part of this that I have a problem with, among the many that are about to follow. The second part of this is that white people are holding on to all this money and, just by the way, they're meant to be xenophobic and they're meant to be part of the problem, but they're also the only ones that, it seems, according to Julius, are hiring people, is the white people.
Yeah.
They're hiring Zimbabweans and Nigerians.
So they don't have to hire South Africans and can pay the Zimbabweans less.
Which is a very strange...
To create disruption amongst African
of
people.
Of course, because it's all part of like...
Because we have meetings where the whites get together and plan how we're going to fuck shit up.
And he doesn't see how... His argument against xenophobia is being undermined by his argument for racism. All right?
See them for what they are. Bias Luis Alababantu, they are causing divisions amongst Africa. Don't glorify these borders. Uti, hey, there is Zimbabwe, there is Nigeria. These borders were never here. These borders were imposed on us by white people who wanted to divide Africa and do what they wanted to do with this continent of Africa.
Well, he's not wrong there. That's history. And you don't have to be a genius to look that up. This is not revelation. This is honestly...
But the principle of territory is not something invented by white people.
No, and there were tribes before, and those tribes did their best to chase tribes they didn't like out of their territory. So that's not a Western invention. The borders, however, he's not wrong, they are. But he's taking this argument in very many directions at this stage. Some of them make sense, some of them so far you can tell are not very sensible. Right?
I am ashamed today to call myself a South African. The image that are coming out of Durban make me to be ashamed. You are beating blacks. You are slaughtering Africans. I've never seen you doing that to a Chinese. I've never seen you doing that to a white person who doesn't have papers. I've never seen you do that to an Indian without papers. But once they say it's an African, because you hate yourself, because white people taught you to hate yourself, you kill other Africans. Stop that nonsense. It ends today. We must unite as Africans.
All right. So, comments. Go ahead.
Firstly, I would like to donate my money to whites saving all the other money so we can keep the money together.
Yeah,
that's
I'd
important
like to
that we stay
your,
consistent.
Your monthly meetings, what's on the agenda.
Well, see, we can't tell you because you're not white.
Yeah, and we've got a treasurer, so I think we need to just make sure that this betting money gets put into the offshore whites united fund.
Okay. I mean, Gordon, more importantly, this money must just not go to any blacks. We must not build an industry with this
money. I don't care what
grand.
We do with it. Let's give it to a Malawian.
No, let's give it to a Chinese.
Okay, yes. Perfect.
Yes.
But again, like, this guy is sprouting this shit up until the elections, and he's getting the cheers from the unemployed, desperate people that he wrangles around him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how he's the one creating the division here. The irony never ends with this guy. He is chief division creator.
And let's not forget that the
CDC.
One of the headlines this morning, the VBS benefits of Floyd Shivambu's brothers have all come to light. A completely inextricably obvious link between the brothers Shivambu, who benefited from 4 million rand from VBS Mutual Bank and a business loan before the bank was put under curatorship. They managed to advance about 2.1 million towards intended business, which was a wine bar and restaurant in Vilakazi Street, Soweto, provisionally named Grand Azania. And of course, we know what happened. That money was just taken and pilfered. Now, Julius may think that we can't link these two, that we can't figure out that he's trying to create. And this is what Hitler did with the Jews. This is the same thing. Create a scapegoat. So you've got a problem with xenophobia. Instead of just, I thought his comments on xenophobia in the beginning made a lot of sense. Just address that. But no, he has to turn it into an opportunity to scapegoat and stereotype and lie about the people he knows he can rally his desperate crowd against. Hmm. And it's pure, unadulterated racism.
Yeah.
Julius is always
pretty racist to me.
Julius is always going on about racism. This is racism, dude. And you cannot expect people to take you seriously on xenophobia if you're going to be a racist, just as you can't expect people to take you seriously on racism if you're going to be xenophobic. And these are two ironies in South Africa that are only made sense of, that you can only create quiet in your mind with the cognitive dissonance going on, if you are prepared to admit that white people and black people are different creatures, which is racist.
Yeah.
Now, the moment you can do that, you can say, well, the way black people treat black people, we give that a different name.
And an implied unified agenda.
Hmm. Yeah, well, of course.
We the men have our patriarchy agenda, and we the whites have our white people agenda. Like, I'm just concerned about my homies, and not being that guy that goes, I've got black homies, but I'm just concerned about my homies, a significant portion of whom happen to be black, and my family. Mm-hmm. And I don't really give a shit, and my football team, and I don't really give a shit about other large population groups.
This whole collectivization thing is such an odd concept.
I mean, yeah, I guess you know, people do tend to move in social circles that they kind of come from or are born into. So there is that.
I had a black dude come up to me. I've seen him at the gym before yesterday. He came up and he said, "Hey, what do you think of the elections?" And I don't even want to get into these conversations with people because, frankly,
more especially at the gym.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a cool dude. We've spoken before. And I don't know him well, but he's just, you know, we talk.
You've said hi enough times that he can come chat to you.
Right. So
you've seen each other sweat. You can talk.
So I said to him, look, I honestly don't know, and I have nothing to say about the elections, and I'm so disillusioned at the moment that I don't believe any of the major parties deserve our vote. I think you've got to vote for one of the smaller ones, and we perhaps are so screwed up right now that there isn't anything we can do. I mean, maybe that's just defeatist, but that's how I feel. And he said to me, well, he's feeling the same way. And I think a lot of people are.
Yeah, I think a lot of the ANC's continuing success, I mean, obviously there's the massive chunk of it that's legacy related and that's understandable. And then there's the ongoing long-term campaign, which is quite successful to not educate young people. But, you know, a lot of it is like, who else should I vote for? Mm. Like, really, there's no one else to vote for. And like, I don't feel like there's anyone that represents me. I will say who I vote for because I don't care. But like I have historically voted DA purely on the grounds of not being the ANC and not seeming to be like a conservative Christian or race related party.
Mm.
So
that's changed within the DA and therefore I don't know if they deserve your vote.
They're the smaller turd.
Yeah, but they're still turd.
Totally a turd.
So yeah, I did enjoy it. Last week's Burning Platform was phenomenal. To think that Catherine Pille and Julius Malema are on the same country, let alone planet, is mind-boggling. Mm. It really is.
No, the one is talking about a country that has opportunities and possibilities and where people can have their own liberty and their own space. And
such positive stuff.
And then, on the other hand, to be blaming everybody else for everything that's happened to you and trying to find ways to fantasize about a reality that's just not attainable. It's two different universes. You're right.
I find it a little sad that a lot of our leaders don't recognize how low the standard is of people making change in the political landscape is, really, Julius doesn't have to do rocket science to change things in this country. If we look at the example of this video, he could just keep his strategy to the first couple of seconds of what he said, and that would be positive change enough.
He's a charismatic
orator. Still just...
He's a charismatic orator. He's got a high enough profile. He's not a complete moron because, like you said, there is an obvious agenda, even if it might be one or two levels sort of beneath the surface. But why not take that opportunity to be the charismatic... sort of opposite of polarizing, unifying character that we need. We don't have anyone with charisma and a good message. And I think most people are fundamentally good, or at least try to be. Mm. And I think people from all walks of life would like to get behind someone who seems to be quite cool and know what they're talking about and be on the ground with the people. I mean, where is there a person who's just... The stage is ripe for someone who's just nice and clever and seems like a non-dickhead.
Good, you're completely right, but that's risky. And people see kindness as weakness a lot of the time. If Julius is going to be nice, people are going to, you sold out straight away.
But you can stamp your foot and be non-kind on lots of issues that need a bit of unkindness right now.
Julius knows exactly what his audience is, what his crowd is, what his product is.
Ben's right.
And this is his product. And unfortunately... this country does have such a fucked up history. A lot of people only know hate and only understand hate because that's a currency almost.
All right, we've got it.
Pretty beautiful, actually, Ben.
It's very sad. Profound.
I'd like to unpack that later.
Beautifully put, rather than find that interesting.
All right, so a couple of things. Do you want to get into some news stories? Five things you need to know today?
Yeah.
Do I?
Of course you do, Gord. You little news hound, you.
So apt.
All right, apparently NASA wants to reach Mars by 2033.
They keep pushing the bloody date back. It's literally every couple of years. They're like, we've had an important announcement. We're going to Mars, and we're going to do it by 10 or 15 years longer than we said 5 years ago.
So NASA have made it clear they want astronauts back on the moon in 2024, and now they're zeroing in on the red planet. They confirmed they want humans to reach Mars by 2033. We want to achieve a Mars landing. By then, a guy called Jim Bridenstine said he is with NASA. He's an administrator at NASA. He told lawmakers at a congressional hearing in Capitol Hill, "We can move up the Mars landing by moving up the moon landing. The moon is the proving ground," added the former Republican congressman who was appointed by President Donald Trump. NASA is racing to enact the plans of Trump, who dispatched Vice President Mike Pence to announce that there is a timetable once again for putting a man on the moon and that they needed to cut it to 2024.
I follow this shit and it's like... It's every, like I said, every 5 years they announce a new 15-year plan to go. Right. George W. Bush wanted to go within his presidential tenure.
So nothing's happened.
Nothing ever happens.
You're jaded now, right, Gordon?
Yeah, I think private industry is going to get us there. I think when I say us, I mean collectively as a species, not me, for fuck sure I'm not going to Mars. But private industry is going to solve nuclear fusion. Private industry is going to solve space travel because they're just more efficient and capitalism rules.
And they put money into research, which...
And they figure out a business viability.
That's why all the best drugs for curing all the worst conditions come from companies that are these evil pharmaceutical companies that everybody has a problem
with. Big pharma extending lifespans.
Right. South African National Park said on Tuesday two of their field rangers were attacked and injured by an elephant in the Kruger National Park.
How dare the elephant...
So apparently, acting general manager of communications at the KNP, the Kruger National Park, said that Alfred Maluleke and Bethwel Khoza were stationed in Pafuri in the north of the park. They were on patrol, and they had an encounter with an elephant. Due to their skills and knowledge of wildlife behavior, they managed to escape with minor injuries. They were rushed to a nearby hospital for observation and were later discharged. So nobody was killed. It's only poachers, they say, that pose a threat to our men and women in green. It is not the animals. These are some of the things that rangers must face on a daily basis.
How crazy.
Yeah, these rangers have a tough life, eh? Because like some of them die. There's gun battles in the Kruger Park. There's genuine warfare.
I wonder why they even need an acting department in the Kruger Park, let alone a general manager. But I know some game ranger type dudes, and they're pretty fearless. I remember one letting a baby hyena chew its he chew his boot because cute. And I'm like, that's like, how can you get out when there's hyenas around?
Yeah, but if you don't go back to the campfire at the end of the day with other story like that.
I know,
you,
sure.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Gauteng, the Premier David Makura said on Tuesday, the provincial government would soon take over the running of trains from PRASA. Provincial government are going to operate not just the buses, also going to operate the metro rail system. The provincial government of Gauteng is now empowered, and there was also a law passed in parliament to urban regions to operate integrated transport systems. So PRASA is going to be devolved to the provincial government. We're now going to be responsible for integrating PRASA and the Gautrain. The new public transport system will be just like the Gautrain by standard look and feel and efficiency. Well, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, we need that badly. Hey, that's like such a pillar of...
Okay, fair enough. But let's ask the question. Maybe some more money on the table. Will that happen before they get to Mars or not?
Well, this is the burning question on everyone's mind.
Remember when they said that they would eventually eliminate all the pit toilets by, what, like 2050 or something? Right. You remember that?
Yeah.
This government doesn't really set timelines, and when they do, they're so far...
And it's a vote-buying thing. It's like, okay, vote for us, we got this plan. Okay, you voted for us.
But also, we must be sympathetic. For government to do things is very difficult. I mean, apparently, they can't even order lunch. You know, like you say, I'm going to the shop, what do you want? They go, okay, cool, but now... it's going to cost you 700 rand for that sandwich. And they say, well, why? It's like, well, I'm going there, and then I've got to see this guy. Mm-hmm. And then because I know this guy, I'm getting a markup.
Right.
And eventually you don't eat.
So let's not get excited about it yet. But that does sound – anything that devolves to kind of provincial or local level is usually, in a competent government system, a good idea. With Gauteng, I'm about 50-50.
Travel infrastructure is just like critical to a modern society functioning well. There has to be good, accessible, reliable public transport. Same way there has to be good primary and secondary education, accessible to most people. It's like you need it.
Yeah,
well, it's what separates countries that work well. It's one of the important things that separates countries that work well from ones that don't. And like, it's why being a person that's holidaying to New York is just so much easier than LA, because in LA you got to rent a car and drive on the other side of the road, or Uber or Lyft everywhere.
Right.
There is no infrastructure like in Joburg, so you need to schlep, and it's like, now what? How do we get from this cool thing to do to this other cool thing to do? Becomes a huge part of your planning and expense and time consumption. Whereas in New York, it's like, okay, well, how far are we from a subway station?
Right, and you just hop in. All right, quickly, two other things you need to know. The first one is that you remember the cyclone, so Cyclone Idai. Apparently, cholera has broken out in central Mozambique. Two people have died. More than 1,400 people have been infected with cholera. The government announced on Tuesday that they're going to go on a mass vaccination drive. Health authorities said 376 new cholera cases have been reported Tuesday, taking the total number of people infected to 1,428 since the first cases were reported last week. Remember, Mozambique doesn't have a lot going for it at the moment. They don't have a lot of money. It's a disaster of an economy. It's a disaster of a country. The politics are all screwed up. And this is not a country that can look after its people. So when a major, you know, calamity like a cyclone comes along and cholera breaks out, this is not a country that can fix that problem on its own. They just don't have the capability.
Survive a cataclysm and like...
they can't even look after their people when there isn't a cataclysm.
Yeah, but you survive, you get your family... You meet that first obstacle of not drowning, then you meet that second obstacle of somehow getting access to the food and the water that there isn't, and then like you get horrifically ill,
start pooing water.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, and things are not managed well from a celestial perspective.
And then just quickly, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of Congress of the House of Representatives, said on Tuesday to Vice President Joe Biden, who's been under heightened scrutiny for his intimate physical style with women, which basically means he's a
creepy, gropey fucker.
He's a pest.
That they should join the straight arm club and shake hands with people as if you both have colds.
Now there's a white people club. Now there's a straight arm club. Yes. I'm missing out on a lot.
I refuse to oppress my gay arm, and it will do whatever it wants.
So apparently, according to Pelosi, she doesn't consider Biden's behavior disqualifying for the presidency, but she said he has to understand that in the world we're in now, people's space is important to them. What she's really saying is that people are so super goddamn touchy at the moment. You can't hug, you can't kiss, you can't shake a hand, you cannot even look at someone in an affectionate way without being accused of rape in America.
Excuse the pun, you're using the word touchy.
You also can't be grabbing asses.
I mean, like, unless you're good looking. That's what Nancy went on to say.
Joe might have been once, but he isn't anymore, and now it's creepy.
I think
there's got to be a middle ground here. Like, Joe Biden has got, you said he's cute?
Oh my goodness. The picture of him eating ice cream and then sitting on the bench
Biden,
with Obama.
Joe Biden.
Oh, he can Joe my Biden.
Yes. Not straight on.
Joe Biden. Oh.
All right, so Joe, if you're looking for someone to molest.
By that look.
Joe's fishing and Sears Biden.
Honestly, if you want to brighten your day, just Google Joe Biden eating ice cream.
There's no hiding from Biden when you see her.
He's 76.
I want to be riding that Biden.
All right, enough.
I don't care what he's doing to ice cream. He's 76.
By the way, Bitcoin's almost at $5,000 this morning. Ethereum at $166 right now. The reason I bring that up is because it was a big bump yesterday and people got very excited. A lot of other people are saying, just ignore it. Ben, over to you. What do you got?
Go
he's
on.
He's still Googling Joe
Biden.
Why
does Biden have
cream?
Two ice creams?
Oh, yeah.
I want to be inside and when I'm Biden, riding Joe Biden.
Okay, today in the sport, Real Madrid wants the greatest stadium in the entire world. VAR might be coming to the big screen for fans' benefit. And what good sports movies are worth watching right now? All right, on to the football to start with. Now, Real Madrid, we all know that since Ajax knocked them out of the Champions League and the other coach got given the flick, well, it hasn't been a good year for them, has it? Zinedine Zidane has been brought back to try and steady the ship. It's hard for me to say that because the season's just been so dreadful. But what they are going to do and what they can do, because they've got lots of money, they really do, they want to create the greatest sporting stadium in the entire world. I know that sounds like a very big statement, and it really is. But essentially, Real Madrid are looking to turn the Bernabeu into what looks like the next Xbox, but just as in a thing that 80,000 people can go into.
Yeah.
It really looks
that
like
thing
the most
does look cool.
Sensational thing.
Looks great.
So it's going to be... Okay, so Spurs just got a new stadium, and it's wonderful. And then people are going to puke, and then eventually it becomes like any other old stadium. But it is a beautiful thing. So what they're going to do is they're going to have visuals. They're going to be like broadcast to the outside of the stadium. So as you go by the Bernabeu, you'll be able to see like visuals of players and like what's happening next. Inside is going to be a 360-degree scoreboard screen.
Jeez, that's amazing.
Can you believe it?
So what, like a literal wraparound? That's
like a wraparound big screen. So
like that thing that runs around the field. They're now those boards that used to be like...
Yeah.
Just like advertising boards that are now videos, they're going to have a band of that running around the middle of
inside the entire stadium. Killer. And they're going to be able to redo the stadium while it's still completely functional as a football stadium. This is what first world does, people.
Right. In Madrid in general, even compared to other parts of Spain, they just do things properly. Yeah. I mean, like everything, public works, statues, cultural stuff, modern buildings. Madrid, like, they build that shit proper.
Well, it's a good point you raised, Gord, because not only are they looking to do this, obviously, to benefit Real Madrid, but also for the city of Madrid, they need to create something that is Madrid-like, and obviously hugely incredible. So there's something to look forward to if you're ever going to travel to Madrid for a long-distance relationship, or if you're just traveling Europe.
I suggest the latter, but Madrid is an amazing place. Like, I don't know if I'd want to live there, but it's an amazing place.
Last night, in actual football that took place on an actual field, Wolves beat Man United, Gordon's team. They were down to 10 men. They saw red, did Man United, and that is really denting their top four chances.
Before Ashley Young got sent off, though. That was toward the end, and then they were crap the whole game.
Well, that's the thing with Man United in the last couple of years. Sometimes they literally just go missing, and they are pretty woeful for large chunks of time. Arsenal, they beat Newcastle on Monday, so that really helps their top four chances. And Fulham, well, they are playing in the lower league next year. They're already relegated. Watford hammered them 4-1, and with that, well, it's just shame and embarrassment for everybody in that club right now as they take that walk of shame towards the nationwide League One, whatever it's called.
Shame.
Just absolute shame.
The championship.
They call it the championship. So patronizing.
It's so stupid.
They call the lower level the championship.
Because the Premier League was first the first division.
Yes.
And then it became the Premier League and the championship was the first division.
Yes.
Now it's the Premier League, then the championship, then the first division. So if you're playing in the first division, you're in the third flipping division.
I know.
It's like a participation trophy of a league.
I totally agree with you, Gord. And you know what? The right sponsor will come along, and the first division will become then like, like the cauldron of champions or some shit.
The,
and then the fourth
the
division,
scrapyard.
Yeah.
The fourth division will be the championship, division. The scrapyard.
And they'll have a theme song.
The bum fight.
The scrapyard.
The fourth division will be the bum fight. The fifth division will be like, what, the crumb scrap. And
yeah, there you go. These are sounds from the Fulham dressing room last night. They are just upset with how things have gone. Oh, well, you can't win them all. Tonight, we'll see Man City versus Cardiff City at 8:45. Of course, Man City, every time they play, they can go back top of the log. And the Liverpool win, and then they go, well, Liverpool's got a chance this year. It's such an enthralling battle. But games are running out. Not many left. Chelsea will take on Brighton and Hove and Albion, otherwise just known as Brighton, of course. And then Spurs will probably be disappointing against Crystal Palace. Although they were very disappointed against Liverpool, so they might want to do something different. And they're, of course, playing at their fresh new stadium, where you can buy Spurs Lager. They have a craft brewery in that stadium.
Sounds about right. But I wonder if the people of Hove and Albion feel disenfranchised by the fact that Brighton is the heroic part.
Totally
like,
agree.
They could have called it Hove, Albion, Brighton, and people would be like, we're playing Hove this weekend, and the Brightonians would be like, well, fucking what about us?
Exactly, Gord, is a very good point. Now, we all know the VAR is quite a controversial thing in football because, well, anything in football is controversial because people who mostly support it scream and shout because they're just basic people. So the VAR, sweeping statement, I know. The VAR is like the review system, okay? So now a lot of the fans feel they've been isolated from this. So the ref goes off, he looks at the small TV screen, and then he comes back and he waves a hand gesture for someone's benefit. But now the VAR screen will be on the screen at stadiums.
Uh-oh.
Can you believe it? So you've taken like 25 years to copy cricket.
Sure, but I mean, if there's one that is like really a subjective call and it's like super close and whatever, like the PSG United comeback game with the elbow penalty thing, which I do believe, even though I'm probably biased, was a penalty. But like that sort of a decision, you're going to have like potential.
It just opens up another place
there
for
could
conflict.
Be a riot. Like, you know, Oaks are in the moment when that stuff happens.
Well, yes, it's a very good point you make, Gord, which then segues into the next part about the football discussion this morning, because there's just so much football, because all the world plays it. Now, racism in football, of course, is a really big deal. It's still in Europe to this day. But now, the president of UEFA, Alexander Seferin, he says referees need to be brave and physically stop the matches when the racial abuse happens, okay? So now you're thinking, like, how can you decipher what some yob is shouting from the stadium? Well, the things are quite obvious nowadays. Obviously, throwing a banana onto a pitch as an African footballer is taking a corner. It smells like racism to me.
Got to make sure you get the right dickhead, though, because that's also one of those things.
I mean, who's
but
watching
if you catch
the crowd,
him red-handed,
you know?
If you're the ref and you're watching the
corner. This is so difficult, but this is what this Seferin then says. This is great. The moment the match is stopped or is not played, I think 90% of normal people in the stadium would kick the asses of those idiots. So now we're talking about another riot, because as soon as a game gets taken away, then the ref sort of points at a certain area, or the touch judge puts his flag out. Mm. There'll be a riot in that section.
Vigilante, well, the shit out of that guy, yeah. Said the ref.
Kangaroo court breakout.
So where I'm going with this whole football thing is that, in the words of Kaiser Chiefs, you can expect a riot quite soon on most things. Yeah, so if you're a neutral, football's about to get a lot more exciting.
Like, it's kind of like what happens at concerts. I mean, I've seen Dave Grohl do it from the Foo Fighters, and it's quite a commonplace thing in metal shows where if someone's being too rough, or, you know, beating smaller people up, or, you know, just being a dick to the people around them, they'll stop
girls,
the show
yeah.
and be like, get the fuck out. And then, not in my experience, like, beat the shit out of the person, but, like, physically remove that person, and they get swiftly ushered out.
Yeah. Well, I agree. Okay, well, look, we've been crapping on about football for way too long, so sport's going to be quite curtailed today. But just to give you some other highlights, the whole Skulk Brits and Akka van der Merwe debacle when they had a bit of a fisty cuff on Saturday. Akka got 3 weeks suspension, basically, and Skulk Brits, who took the punches, got 4 weeks. And now, if obviously, you dig a bit deeper into the stories, because these disciplinary hearings are mostly subjective and quite shitty, and ultimately end in New Zealand players never getting banned. Well, Skulk Brits has 2 priors of punching. So when he appealed his case, those 2 priors, which we didn't maybe know about in the Northern Hemisphere, they get put onto this current one, and then that's why his ban of 4 weeks is what it is.
But you see, this is where they need to take the cameras. We want to see the disciplinary hearings. There'll be an audience for
there
that.
There we go. Sure. People want to see this live stream, this kind of stuff. It'll be boring as all hell. and people won't watch after like the second one, but at least be transparent around this kind of stuff. And I know people on Twitter are always just going for World Rugby and Sanzar and disciplinary hearings and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the time they are completely shit. But they do have a system. And we've got to have consistency, if nothing else. And then other people will go, oh, well, rugby's going soft, you can't punch anymore. Yes, that's exactly what the rules say. If we're going to have punching, then before you notice, like, club rugby and Bontehevel. I mean, that's rough. We can't have that as our, like, top-line rugby.
No.
Simple, really. Simple. That's pretty much it for your sport, actually. All right. We won't get to the sporting movies today. Maybe some other time. Maybe Friday.
All right. Very good. Yeah. Saving some good stuff for Friday.
Well, great. Yeah, because, you know, Sia's itching next to me. He's squirming in his chair, looking to get into it.
Well, Caden says Sia is going to be sliding in Biden. And someone else with lots of Biden stuff coming.
Sometimes he likes a Biden. I've heard Joe Biden.
No, not to make myself sound like a creep, but for how old did he say it was? Been 73. He looks good for 73. Oh, pop those aviator sunglasses on. Put him on a bench. Lick that ice cream.
Keep talking, Sia. You're putting a lot of people off. All right, let's get to said by Sia this morning.
Sia and Joe Biden. That's a image.
That's the visual you need for this morning. Well, here's a visual of a different kind that I think we all need to have. I, as many of you know, that when a natural disaster happens, when we hear of these unfortunate circumstances, we see the same type of things circulating. We hear of the number of people affected and the sad stories that come from these situations. But I often think these are also environments for so much good to be highlighted as well. And I don't know about you, but I've seen this photo of this old lady carrying sacks on her head as she walks, and this was taken just with the cyclone that hit our continent recently. And I've actually dug up her story more and found out what it was all about.
Yes.
And so this Gogo is actually 71 years old. Her surname is Delon, and so for now, all I find about her on social media is people refer to her as Gogo Delon.
Right.
And this is a 70-year-old woman who actually spends her time right now selling a bunch of clothes and random house supplies to take care of her family. And this particular photo of her that's gone viral on social media is her after walking for more than 17 kilometers because she was on the other side of Zimbabwe when she heard that the cyclone had hit. And she thought, what can I do to help? I instantly can at least give some people who've been affected by the cyclone these clothes that I have. So she decided to walk these 17 kilometers straight to where the cyclone had first hit, and she started handing out what is essentially her stock to sell. So I think there's stories like this, and thanks to what was it, the Highlands Presbyterian Church in Harare, who actually posted this on their Facebook group, and this is how we now know of this. That photo alone has been shared more than 2,400 times of this Gogo, and the same Facebook group has also been highlighting some of the good that's been coming out as well. People who have been, you know, some of the selfless service men and women who, you know, there's a picture that I saw earlier of two service men in a helicopter actually sleeping, and the caption was along the lines of, this is the only nap that they get to have, because as soon as the helicopter hits the ground, these people have been going out and helping as much as they can. There's another page that I've been following called Harare Helps. People are just banding up together doing collection drives, and we sometimes overlook these things, but it's all these small helps, you know, these small acts of service.
What is a good place to drop like $500 or whatever you can spare? Like who do you recommend as a legit charity doing good work on the ground there for an oak like me that might want to just pop a couple of ron to them?
Yeah, I am not really at liberty to recommend such a thing, but I think the first step, the page that I've been seeing for all of these updates is Harare Helps.
Is that on Facebook?
Yeah, on a Facebook page like that, and people are always volunteering, and it's just to see these types of images is really inspiring, for lack of a better term. But here's the good news as well, for this Gogo, by the way, the 17-year-old Gogo who sold her stock, who gave of her stock to help other people affected by the cyclone, a Zimbabwean billionaire saw this picture and thought, My goodness, you are a remarkable woman. And for that, I will now take you officially off your workload and give you $1,000. That's your monthly allowance for the rest of your life. At your age, you should not be walking the likes of 17 kilometers. You are selfless and do good enough. And for that simple reason, he has said, his name is Strive, has said that he will build a Gogo house anywhere she wants in Zimbabwe. He will equip her with solar power and running water and then give her a monthly allowance of $1,000 every single month.
Oak's obviously a billionaire in a different currency than Zimbabwe.
Yeah, look, he's a billionaire.
I'm a billionaire in Zimbabwe dollars, but that's super
lovely. No. He's a billionaire. He can afford to. His name is Strive Masiyiwa, and he was first listed as a billionaire in 2002 in Time magazine.
That's like the lady who got so badly screwed by the Fyre Fest, that Jamaican catering lady, getting her, everyone sort of mobilizing. It's lovely when stuff like that happens.
So I'm not being naive at all, but I think this morning for Sid Bassey, I just wanted to highlight that there's, in all of these dire situations, there's also opportunities to do good, and people definitely are doing good. And that's what we need to remember as well.
And I'm going to pop onto Harari Helps on Facebook and see about if I can't track down a good charity there.
Oh, thanks, okay. God.
Well, you keep us informed.
That's it. Sid Bassey for this morning.
It's just about 7 o'clock. We've got loads of stuff to talk about this morning. Plenty of things that we want to get through, and you can call us if you would like. We're on Skype. You can also message us. We're taking voice notes, by the way. I found a way to play them finally after all this time. So if you want to send us voice notes, you can do that 0797482090. That's like a WhatsApp number, so you can use it for Telegram, WhatsApp, Signal, whatever messaging platform you use, and they all come through to us, and then I can play the voice notes. So if you don't have time to actually get on the line and wait to talk to us, then you can always send us a voice note. And, you know, some of them I'll play, some of them I won't. If you keep it under 20 seconds, it's likely to be played than if it's longer than that.
Yeah, but just try to fight the urge to have bodily noises. Like, we don't need that.
What do you mean?
Got that.
Who's sending...
Well, you say 20 seconds. People will obviously take the piss here. And
you can pre-screen them before you play them, can't you?
I'm going to play them straight up, like we would take a call without screening it.
Good luck with having bodily noises.
That's genuinely what you think of people?
Hateful rant. Well, I think of people. Okay, right. TikTok. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not betting. I'm not going to bet Ben again. I've lost enough on this show. Assuming the best people.
Apart from the bodily noises, you can message us 0797482090. All right, let's hear from you.
This is CliffCentral.com.